Okay. And a little more about myself. For those of you who were able to make the Ascension Day service on Thursday at the cathedral, it did become one of those confessional moments, the pulpit confessional, as I often call it. And I want to actually commend David for the work he did for the music on Thursday, which was exceptional. It really was absolutely beautiful setting for the Eucharist. And David stood in to take on the choral part of that and to guide the choir, who did a wonderful job. And Ascension Day has become much more important to me over the years. And this is the Sunday after Ascension. We don't get any mention of Ascension in the readings for today, but I'm going to start by doing that anyway. I grew up in a tradition for which the key moment, the key theological key, as it were, was the cross, was the crucifixion of Jesus. The death of Jesus, which happened as a result of our wickedness, and was the theological equivalent of Jesus taking a bullet for us. Dying in a particularly bloody and painful way, and the gory details were kind of important because we're all very bad and needed to be convinced of how very bad we were. I have to say my own, as you might be able to tell, theology of the cross has moved on somewhat from that point. And what I see in the story of the crucifixion is much more about the cost of love, the result of standing up to injustice, and the way in which a world of empire and oppression responds to true freedom and to gracious love. But I'll do that in another sermon, another time. As I've continued now for 40 years in this Christian journey, I have, though, become more and more convinced of the importance of the bookends of our Christian story, our Jesus story, the incarnation and the ascension. Because in these stories, as fabulous as they are, we see the very ground of who we are as Christians. More importantly, of who we are as human beings. Those who bear the divine image, enfleshed. Those who are rooted in this world, in God's creation. So I believe Ascension Day to be a really important time in the church's year. But I think it's a feast that we often overlook because we have problems with the very idea of it. In our sophisticated and technological world, we wonder about the mechanics. We now know that the world is not flat, with heaven up there, as our early sisters and brothers would have believed. So images of our Lord rising up into the clouds to be absorbed into the bosom of the Father would no longer have that ring to them as when we believed that the world was stacked, the underworld, earth as we are, and heaven up there. The picture in of the feet sticking out of the ceiling in the chapel at Walsingham in Norfolk in England, we find now rather comical instead of being awe-inspiring. So I think the mechanics shouldn't distract us. What the story tells us is that somehow Christ is taken to be reabsorbed, reintegrated into the divine in bodily form. And those who saw it could only describe it in the language that they had, as Jesus rising where they believed God was, upward. And our takeaway should be that Christ in resurrection body is bodily reintegrated into the dynamic of Trinity. And in this teaching, we see the reaffirmation of what begins with the incarnation, the reaffirmation of flesh, of body, that God understands what it is to be human and enfleshed. But also, it's a radical statement about the importance of every body and of this earthy, created world. That was my sermon on Thursday, so I'm not going to preach that one again. Even though David said it was good enough to actually preach again, which was really nice to hear. But this is a solid and affirming theology. And that's the root of my own spirituality and the driver behind being fully committed to justice for all people, for affirmation for all people, whoever they are, and to being committed to the care of this earth, this wonderful, beautiful, mucky, everyday earth. And I say that because the reason we do what we do is important. There are, for instance, many people who want to tackle what they call the homelessness problem, or more telling was the phrase of one person who didn't get elected to city council but put in their election material, "I'm against the homeless." There are many who want to deal with these issues, social issues in our world, because they see them as issues. Not because it's the compassionate and the right thing to do, but perhaps because street people make our city look untidy, or perhaps because they remind us of a system which keeps people in poverty, which does not provide adequate resources to feed and clothe and care for all people, to deal with mental health needs. It's entirely possible to do the right thing for the wrong reason. And we see something of that in today's story from Acts. A part of the story, just the little beginning bit of the story that we heard this morning from the Acts of the Apostles, which we talked around for ages at Sermon Circle on Wednesday, and which has stuck with me more than the fantastic story of the earthquake and the conversion of the jailer and all that excitement, that sort of junior boys comic kind of excitement that we had in today's story. Paul and his companions are wandering around in the town of Philippi, followed by a young slave woman calling out that they are slaves of the Most High God and that they have a way of healing and wholeness, a way of salvation. And Paul gets sick of it. And after a few days, it says, took him a few days, very much annoyed, and that's the quote, he turns and rebukes the spirit which causes her to say these things. And she loses the power of divination, fortune telling, which is the money spinner for her owners. Paul does what he does because he's ticked. He doesn't do it as a critique of slavery or to rebuke the idea that a person can be treated like property. He doesn't do it because the spirit of divination is in any way damaging to this young woman. He doesn't do it because it's the right thing to do. He does it because he's annoyed, very annoyed. We aren't given any clues in the story as to why he didn't do it before. Perhaps he and his companions were trying to keep a low profile and this young woman was interfering in that. Although that's not something we see very much in the Acts stories, Paul trying to keep a low profile. Perhaps it's because he simply doesn't know how to respond. Perhaps it's because he doesn't see that it's wrong for a young woman to be a slave and being used to make money for her owners. But what we do see is that when he does rebuke what makes her follow Paul's group of friends around, he speaks a word which changes her, and those around her are angered by this and turn on Paul and his friends. And because the consequences of doing what is right are often uncomfortable, because they can be, as we hear in this story, painful and dangerous, we should do them for the right reason. The recognition of the value of every human person and the recognition of the importance of caring for the earth on which we live. And our grounding for all our action can be found in our gospel reading for today, taken from St. John's record of the last prayers of Jesus before his arrest and trial. Jesus prays that they may be completely one, so that the world may believe that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. That's what we are here for. That's the role of the church in today's world, to be one, as a reflection of the oneness of humanity, the oneness of the divine, and the love which binds us together in our shared humanity and divinity. The church is not a social club or a society for the preservation of ancient buildings, That being said, thank you again to those who worked so hard at the work day yesterday. Our services on Sunday do not exist for our own comfort or convenience, but for the worship of God and to sustain us in our journey of faith, that we might be transformed and that we might transform the world. We should not be coming here on a Sunday hoping to find something just to lull us into a sense of security and well-being, but something that stirs us to follow, to seek, to serve a living God, a God of love and justice, a God of truth and life. Do we take those commands of Christ and our scriptures seriously enough to allow them to inconvenience us? Would we be willing to lay down something of our lives for the sake of others? In our reading from Acts, we're told that Paul and his companions, in chains for the gospel, praised God in prison. How many of us feel that we would be able to stand up for all that we claim to believe if it meant that kind of imprisonment? I'm not sure I would. But we are not called to do any of this on our own. We do it in community, but more than that as well, the promise of this ascension time is that Christ does not leave us to do this alone. Christ is with us, clothing us with power from on high. But that's another story, the story of Pentecost. More next week.